The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Is your life in balance? Your emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual life? Does it sometimes feel that you're in need of a healing check? Welcome to Chella's Chat with host Chella Zappia. In the next hour, get ready for an honest discussion with special guest experts and contributions from you and other listeners. Now to get everything started, here is Chella.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. And I'm your host, Chella Zappia, and you're listening to Chella's Chat on Voice America's Health and Wellness Channel. This show is all about healing through inspiration and information, providing you with the information and tools you need to heal your life. So most weeks, we have guest speakers who will guide you through different topics that can heal and change your life. You can always connect with me at chellazappia.com or email me at chellazappia@outlook.com. Again, for people that don't know, Chella is C-E-L-L-A. Zappia@outlook.com. And you can also check out, I have another website. It's miracleseedsoflife.com/Chella Zappia. And it's about an incredible healing product, Soul, which you can read all about on that website. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions you want to call into the show today, you feel free to do it. The number is 866-472-5792. And today's show is called Stop the Violence, Know the Facts. And my guest today is Larissa Sutherland, who serves as the Education and Outreach Coordinator for Samaritan House, a domestic violence resource center in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Originally from the Appalachian Mountains, she comes from a long line of educators and activists and has worked in outreach programs on both ends of the state. She's particularly dedicated to the pursuit of social equality and to education programs focused on healthy relationships, gender parity, and the prevention of interpersonal violence. Larissa provides free trainings and workshops to various groups, including students from middle school through college, allied professionals, military personnel, physicians, faith-based groups, and civic agencies, amongst others. Educational trainings are focused on intimate partner violence prevention and include topics such as dynamics of domestic violence, dating violence, stalking awareness, abuse in later life, effects of violence on children, so on and so forth. She does many, many trainings. She represents Samaritan House on regional domestic violence task forces, participates in legislative advocacy initiatives, facilitates the Virginia Beach Coordinated Community Response Team, and will co-chair the city's domestic violence fatality review team. And that was a mouthful. So before I introduce Larissa and we start talking to her, I wanted to let everybody know why I'm passionate about this, why I feel it's very necessary to bring this information out. First of all, for people that listen to me, know my story, know that I'm very passionate about suicide prevention and awareness. And this goes along with that. This, you know, when you're in these intimate violent relationships, domestic violence of any kind, as we get into the subject, I think it's going to be a much broader subject than people thought, that people feel hopeless. And when you feel hopeless, you get depressed, and suicide is very prevalent with this. So it kind of comes full circle. Also, for me, I grew up in a household that probably didn't realize that at the time, but there was domestic violence going on in my household. You know, some physical, emotional, mental, for sure. It wasn't that it was constant all the time, but it was definitely there. And then my first relationship, which from the time I was 16 until 23, it was on again, off again. Great guy, good looking, came from a great household, educated. But, you know, I thought it was okay that he was jealous at first, thought that meant he loved me. People, that's not love. I mean, it went from jealousy to possessiveness to when I would go out with my friends, I'd come home at night and he'd be sitting in my house. They turned on lights and there he'd be stalking me. And at the end, it became physically violent. And I even woke up one night, I was living with my parents and he happened, I don't know, got in my house somehow and he had his hands around my neck. Now, he did not actually strangle me, but his hands were around my neck and I felt powerless to call out because I was fearful of him strangling me. So you know, and then what would happen in that situation is then he would cry and he was sorry and he loved me. And then I would be like, instead of me being the victim, he was the victim. And it would be a cycle. So obviously now in my life, I see that that was really not right. And it was definitely abuse. And lastly, before I introduce Theresa, I want people to know who's listening. Parents, my mom knew something was going on, but she didn't know what, because I was protecting him. If you have a daughter or a son that you fear is either in an abusive relationship where they're being abused, or perhaps they have signs of being an abuser themselves, you know, really listen to the show, know the signs. If you fear that your son and daughter, because women can too be abusers, maybe you can get them help now. So this is not something they do their whole life. So whew, we had a mouthful there. So Larissa, welcome to the show. I'm so happy you're here. Oh, and lastly, I didn't mention everybody that I actually volunteer at Samaritan House with Larissa and fantastic people. So I'm passionate about it. It's a great organization in Virginia Beach, Virginia. However, wherever you are in the world listening to this, there is an organization close to you that can help you. So even though we're talking about, this is a worldwide epidemic, and we're talking about the center that we work with here, but this is all over. So Larissa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tella. Thank you so much. And thank you for giving us the opportunity to get this information out before a lot of folks who may need it. So appreciate that.
Yeah, no, Larissa is an awesome educator. I sat in 3 days of workshops with her and just awed by her. So Larissa, let's get down to it. What can you tell us? What is a good working definition for domestic violence? I mean, it's more than physical, of course. So can you explain that?
I think a lot of people have an idea already about what domestic violence looks like, and we recognize it easily when there's physical assault in a relationship. But what we really need to start looking at when we're defining domestic violence and understanding it is not about physical or sexual assault, but about control. So a working definition would be a pattern of behaviors that one partner uses in a relationship with another to hold and establish power and control. So that might include physical assault, but it could be verbal abuse, something to knock someone's self-esteem down so that they are no longer feeling as if they can make decisions or contribute to the relationship. It could be financial abuse, a lot of that what you're describing with the jealousy and possessiveness. Some of these things we might overlook and or might even think are natural parts of relationships because they're very common.
Right. We think, oh, he loves me. I mean, I know that many, you know, that's what we think. Oh, he loves me, or he'd never hurt me, or he didn't mean it.
Right.
But this is obviously, this is a pattern, and it's the beginning of a pattern, correct?
Yeah. And often, you know, the pattern, no one goes into a relationship that's abusive. It never starts that way. People go into relationships with people they hope will be everything they want them to be and everything that they appear to be. And because a lot of times those relationships, they may start very quickly and escalate to a very passionate place very soon, which is sometimes a warning sign that maybe this is a little too good to be true. And then we start seeing some of these signals popping up, red flags that are fairly easy to overlook or fairly easy to maybe rationalize away in the hope that this is not something to really be concerned about.
We rationalize.
Mm-hmm. Right. And all of the restricting your personal freedoms, telling you how you can dress, what to wear, where you can go, what kind of friends you can have, what your Facebook page can look like, all of those pieces are things that we might overlook as part of like a normal, natural relationship. And while it might be a normal relationship because many people are in relationships like that, it's not a healthy one.
So before we get to I had another question, but then this question popped in, being, do most of the patterns start happening with people? Like if you're going to, you know, be an abuser, you know, do these patterns start from a young age, like teenage years? I mean, most people do, you know, I guess the statistics are probably that they would start younger than older. Like all of a sudden you're not going to be 40 years old and all of a sudden become an abuser, or am I wrong?
Most patterns that are developed at an early age, and they are behaviors that are learned, often learned by a home environment or what we're finding modeled for us or what we find that works. And so we see intimate partner violence starting in relationships very young, and for instance, women are more likely to experience violence between the ages of 18 and 24. And our teenagers right now are experiencing a lot of the same kinds of the types of behaviors that adults are experiencing in intimate partner violent relationships. And that violence is as extreme sometimes with teenagers and tweens and teens as it is with adults. So yeah, these are sometimes those patterns start early and then they are fine-tuned and honed until, you know, we have some folks are perfected abusers.
Okay. And of course, I know that the patterns are, a statistic I had heard that boys who witness domestic violence are twice as likely to abuse their own partners and children when they become adults.
Right. Yeah, we tend to identify with our first families, the caretakers we have, and either many kids, not all kids who are growing up in homes where there's violence, but many may identify with one role or the other, either the victim or the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm. So how many, is there a way for us to know how many people are victims and who these victims are? Are there numbers out there?
There are numbers, and there are a lot of different ways that we're assessing who's being victimized and in what ways people are being victimized. The CDC does a survey of an intimate partner and sexual violence survey. It's a pretty extensive survey, and they have released the results of that, and then the last major survey they did was in 2010, and then they have released an interpretation or reinterpretation of those stats recently. But their estimation is that 12 million Americans each year are victims of rape, physical assault, or stalking by an intimate partner.
I think that those numbers are staggering. 12 million, and you said Americans. So
yes.
This is a worldwide show. So if that's just in America, I can't imagine the number around the world.
Yes, it's astonishing. What it comes down to is, with violence against women specifically, that number is about 1 in 3 women on the planet will experience some form of physical or sexual assault. So, but we're all not just looking at female victims in the CDC's survey. We're looking at men and women who are being abused by intimate partners who may be men or women. So, and we're not even counting, with 12 million Americans each year experiencing physical assault, we're not really counting how many people are in relationships that are defined by that power and control, when those relationships may have extreme emotional, verbal, and financial abuse that's not illegal.
Well, and of course, many people don't even report. Most cases of domestic violence aren't even reported. If they're not reported, then they cannot be on the survey, I take it.
Right.
The number is really probably much higher than 12 million. Would you agree?
Yeah. This is a phone survey that the CDC does, but many of the other reports that come in, people are looking at the police reports. We're collecting information across Virginia of all of the hotline calls that all of the shelter programs receive and all of the people who come into shelter and seek services either through community-based services or shelter services. So a lot of those numbers are coming together from various sources. Even when people aren't reporting to the police directly, they may be reaching out for help to a crisis line. But even with that, we have a lot of people who are in violent households or living under someone else's control who are telling absolutely no one. Mm-hmm. So they are very much under the radar. I think it's one of our most underreported crimes.
So absolutely. Let's get down to the real victims here, the children. How are children affected?
This is a really, really sad piece of this whole dynamic in family violence, is that our children are very vastly impacted by violence in our homes. And when we're experiencing violence, it changes who we are. And there's a tremendous amount of research around developmental delays and experience that children who are exposed to violence have. And so what we're really looking at is children who form secure attachments with primary caregivers. And those are the attachments that where a child will feel safe. They have better outcomes than those who are growing up in environments where there is great instability and fear. And we see some of those developmental concerns showing up in the neuron pathways are developing in response to violence, and that why we might be seeing increases in cortisone and adrenaline as part of development. So when you're getting really into the deep, early childhood development brain chemistry, it's really an important point to look at And I think because a lot of people are underestimating the effects of violence in their homes on their children, particularly if they're very young, in that 0 to 2 year old age range, we might be tending to think that the violence isn't affecting them. They're not aware of what's going on. So that's one of those areas where we're seeing a big impact. And then also, when children are exposed to violence, what they're learning is that this is a normal relationship. Mm-hmm. This is something that's happening around us, and it's not. There's nothing about this environment at home that seems out of character or unhealthy until people are exposed to something different. So there are a lot of lessons that kids might learn from growing up in an environment with violence that, first of all, it's normal. Secondly, that using violence and fear is an effective way to get what you want because it works. And thirdly, the person who's being abused is not as valuable as the person who is who holds the power.
The power.
So,
mm-hmm.
Right.
And it sounds like, so talking about what's happening in children's with their brain chemistry, it's they're developing that fight or flight response, but
right.
It's constantly turned
right.
on. You know, they're always,
exactly.
You know, at ready to, you know, protect themselves or perhaps even protect a parent being abused. Another statistic I saw is 30 to 60% of perpetrators of intimate partner violence also abuse children in the household.
Absolutely. Where children are at great risk for physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional abuse. And that vulnerability that children have, it increases the risk further into life of being victimized by other people or, you know, experiencing mental and physical health concerns, injury and anxiety and aggression and depression and respiratory infections, gastrointestinal infections. All of these risks are higher for children who are growing up in homes that are violent.
That's really sad. And it becomes, like you said, their norm. That's why this is a cycle that
right.
goes around and around and around, because what else do they know? I think, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about that later in the show, you know, what a healthy relationship would look like.
Right.
Many people listening today may think you're in a, you know, maybe you don't think you're in a fantastic relationship, but you might think you're in a pretty healthy relationship. And after you hear the show today, you may have second thoughts as to what kind of relationship you're really in. I think because sometimes we just don't know any different. You don't know any different, you know, and so it's kind of like we know what we know and we know what we don't know, but we don't know what we don't know. In other words,
exactly.
if you've never experienced something like a healthy relationship or what that even looks like, because you don't know anybody that's in that, then you don't even know
right.
that you don't know that, you know, if that makes
yeah.
sense.
We're very susceptible to following the patterns and familiarities in our lives. So it isn't an indicator that every child who's ever grown up in a home where there's violence is destined to be a perpetrator or a victim of violence. But there is a greater likelihood that these patterns will seem familiar and comfortable and normal. So, mm-hmm. yeah. But learning, having that piece of education of what to look for to recognize that this is not a healthy relationship, that you know we're deserving a better lot in life than that, then it makes a lot of difference in how people are going about things.
Right, and that people need to know that you are worth it, you are valuable, every person has value. We're going to be getting ready for break in a couple minutes, but maybe we can speak a little bit about this before break. Relationships between substance abuse and domestic violence, how great is that?
Well, there is a bit of an overlap. These are separate issues, and they may exacerbate violence in a relationship, but there's no real causal relationship between substance abuse and domestic violence or mental illness and domestic violence. Mm. So intimate partner violence, this is the important thing to know, is that this is a learned behavior. This is something that is very much in control of the person who is abusing. So the physical violence tends to escalate when there's substance abuse, but each of these issues has to be addressed separately. So we can't say, you know, she only gets like this when she's high, or if he would just stop drinking, we would be okay. Because that system of control is already in place, regardless of the introduction of substances. The behaviors may be more present when someone's under the influence, but they didn't begin because of the use of alcohol or drugs.
Okay, so in other words, you know, it's not like the alcohol made me do it.
Right.
It's already there, or the, you know, drugs.
Exactly. There's an entire system of control in play.
So we're getting ready for break. Larissa, how can people get in touch with you or with Samaritan House if they have any questions or any other kind of numbers you want to put out there?
Sure. Our crisis hotline, which is the point of contact for all of our services, but also for any questions you might have about the issues, is 757-430-2120.
And we are getting ready for break, and this is Chella Zappi. And again, you please call in if you have any questions, and you can get me at chellazappia.com or Facebook at Chella Zappi. And we will be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you have cancer, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. While many medical professionals can give us some of the answers, there are many more unanswered questions that can't always be answered to our satisfaction. Listen for Cancer Concepts and Compliments with Dr. James Belanger. We'll discuss the tests, the compromised immune system, how cancer grows, and what natural medicines could be added to conventional therapies that may help keep it at bay. Cancer Concepts and Compliments airs live every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Holy hormones, honey! Every week, this groundbreaking radio show brings you insight about hormone fluctuations, addressing the core biological issues that cause mood disorders, and offers a general support center for women everywhere at any stage in their lives. Host Leslie Carroll Botha has the passion and drive to help you make informed decisions about your well-being and reclaim your life. Holy Hormones, Honey, sponsored by True Hope Incorporated, the leaders in brain health, is broadcast live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Chella's Chat. To reach Chella Zappia or today's guest, please call into the show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to chellazappia@outlook.com. Now, back to Chella's Chat.
Welcome back to Chella's Chat. And today we're talking with Larissa Sutherland, who serves as the Education and Outreach Coordinator for Samaritan House, which is a domestic violence resource center in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And we're really speaking about stopping the violence, knowing the facts. And what I'm always full of quotes. So a quote I came across, abusers choose to abuse. Don't suffer in silence. You are not to blame. So as we were talking before, even with mental illness and substance abuse, there's never an excuse. They make the conscious choice. It is all about control. And Larissa, we were speaking about before, if anybody's just getting on the show now, I actually volunteer at Samaritan House. It's an incredible organization. And I have learned a lot in my time there. And there is something called a power and control wheel. Can you explain this?
Sure. The power and control wheel is sort of a diagnostic tool that was created in Duluth, Minnesota, sometime around the 80s, I think. Ellen Pence and some advocates in Duluth were looking at domestic violence as a social issue and trying to figure out what was going on in individual relationships. And what they did was they asked some questions to victims of violence, said, what was your relationship like? What kinds of things went on? And the women who were responding told remarkably similar stories about their experiences. So those advocates took all of the responses, looked at them, and discovered that there was a real pattern going on within domestic violence situations. And so they created this tool, the power and control wheel, and it's a visual with different spokes identifying different common behaviors that an abuser will use to hold on to that power and control. So at the center of the wheel is power and control, and then there are many behaviors that might reinforce that power and control, and then the outside of the wheel is physical and sexual violence. So it all is working together, and this wheel helps people identify whether they're in a situation that's a potentially a violent situation when we might not be aware that our situation is abusive or dangerous.
So how can, where, if they wanted to actually see the visual of this will, which I think is very powerful, where can they find that? I know they could probably find it many websites. What's the closest website they can go to find this?
A lot of information we have available on our Samaritan House website, which is www.samaritanhouseva.org. And our resource page, education resource pages, have section has a lot of this information. We have power and control wheels. A lot of those are available. And the power and control wheel has been adapted for different circumstances. So there might be a power and control wheel specific to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender relationships, or based on specific to military families and so on. So that, a lot of that information is there. But if you're really just looking quickly for power and control wheel, a simple Google search should pull that up.
Mm-hmm. And this is really powerful. So again, if you're not sure if you're in that kind of relationship, or if, even if you kind of know that you are, but you don't know how badly you might be in it, or somebody you know or loves, I think you should really check it out, because some of the things you're going to find on there is intimidation, emotional abuse, isolation, you know, using your children. These are just some of the things that are in this wheel that obviously, like you said, it was the Duluth model is what they call it back then, mm-hmm. right? It happened is what most people, when they describe it, and this is people around the world, when they describe what kind of situation they're in, most people find themselves in the wheel here. Yeah. So I think it's really powerful. So how do people end up feeling trapped in an abusive situation? Like, why do people keep returning to an abusive partner over and over? I know a lot of people think, why don't you just leave?
Right. And I think we have a lot of work to do around raising awareness of domestic violence and just educating people about the dynamics of that, so that we're really putting the responsibility of the problem of domestic violence on the right person. And that's not the person who's being abused, but the person who is the abuser. And so it even comes in framing this question differently of, you know, why doesn't the person just leave instead, and asking, why doesn't this person just stop being abusive? Mm-hmm. And restore the family in that way. So but looking at, you know, why wouldn't someone just leave? There are a lot of reasons. Some of them right off, you might not be even aware that you're in an abusive relationship. It may have that normal feel to it. So just leaving that situation might not seem like an option, because there isn't anything in your mind different out there. And then some people will be in denial. They might feel like they have that they have the situation under control, that they know it's not going well, but they feel as if they have it under control. And then a lot of people, this is a huge piece that keeps folks in a relationship longer than is good for them, is the lack of financial resources to become self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And that's a piece that abusers may play on, restricting access to finances, making sure that all of the assets are in the abuser's name and not the victim's name, to make it really difficult for someone to break out on their own, especially if they are looking at taking children with them and leaving a situation that maybe they've had absolutely no financial power or input, and trying to make it on their own is really intimidating. And they may not have anywhere to go. That sense of, I don't have friends and family anymore. My abuser has isolated me, has cut off the ties to everyone who could help me. Where will I go now? So not knowing any of the resources available. And then, I mean, there's pressure everywhere from a lot of people, from sources like friends and family members who are saying, you know, you work it out, try to work out this relationship, stay in it as long as you can, we can't divorce. I have influences from faith groups and strong cultural trends, mores and religious tenets and all. And then some people have a sense of hope about the relationship. They might get trapped in this cycle of the abuser committing an act of violence and then immediately apologizing, and the person who's being abused is really hoping that this is the last time this will happen, and they're looking back to remembering who this person was when they first were involved in the relationship, and hoping that that person will be the one who comes out on top, that they're going to return to being this person. And then a lot of people are embarrassed. I think that mm-hmm. is a big piece that keeps people from reaching out and telling anyone. They feel shamed, especially if their abuser has been working hard to lower their self-esteem and confidence, and they're starting to feel as if all of the problems in the relationship really are their fault. They're less likely to go forward and ask someone else for help or let anyone know what's going on. So these are some of the things. I think one of the biggest reasons that people don't leave a relationship, or they leave and they return to the relationship, is just abject fear. Mm-hmm. And that's a very real fear.
So what are the signs that, okay, so we're in these situations, and where does the scales tip where the signs come out that a situation has now become lethal?
Ooh, that's a very scary situation, because lethality increases when someone decides to leave the relationship. So, and often when someone gets up the courage to leave, it's often when they realize, you know, if I don't get out, I'm going to die. And that's a very real fear, especially if your abuser is really threatening to kill you or to kill your children. And that's really one of the signs is a threat. Someone threatening you, mm-hmm. threatening your children, the people you care about, someone who has experienced strangulation, for example. You mentioned the hands around your throat.
Yes.
Someone who's experienced strangulation is about 8 times at a higher risk for fatality.
Wow.
If there are weapons available, if anyone's ever been threatened by a weapon, if the abuser has ever threatened suicide, this is something to pay attention to. Because this is often where we might find a homicide-suicide situation. And then the biggest cue is if you are preparing to leave or have left the relationship, that potential for lethality increases substantially and is held at a level of increased lethality for about 2 years. And what that looks like really is that around 70 to 75% of women who have left a physically abusive relationship and were later killed were in that process of leaving or had left.
So we have. Yeah, there's some statistics, right? And I don't know, correct me if any of the information I'm putting out is not correct, but almost 1/3 of female homicide victims that are reported in police records are killed by an intimate partner. And 70 to 80% of intimate partner homicides, no matter which partner was killed, the man physically abused the woman before the murder. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you have different statistics on that. Less than 1/5 of victims reporting an injury from intimate partner violence sought medical treatment following the injury, and so on and so forth. I was lucky, fortunate enough to get the education and a strangulation, I don't know what to call it, what was it, Larissa, like a workshop or an educational
awareness training
that Samaritan House put on, and it was very, it was very difficult in a lot of ways to see it, but it was needed to be seen that this is huge. Strangulation is huge, and many people don't realize the effects of what happens and what this does to a person's, you know, if they're not killed, what this does to their necks, how easily they can be killed. And can you talk about strangulation a little bit? I know that the laws just changed, at least in our state, on this.
Sure. Strangulation is one of those behaviors that a lot of people in intimate partner relationships experience, and often the danger of that of strangulation is very much underestimated. It can be a very easily lethal situation, but what it also does, a lot of people when reporting back about experiencing strangulation, they're talking about how this is the moment they realized that they were completely out of control, that this person could kill them if they wanted to. And that's often a real turning point in people's relationships when they finally recognize that they have lost the power, lost the control completely in that relationship. So we're...
And it's not always by the hand either.
Right.
Strangulation is not always just a person, you know, with their hand grasped around the neck, like kind of happened to me. But what are some other ways that people are strangled?
People could be held in sort of a headlock, forearm pressed against the neck, and also could be a ligature, something wrapped around the neck. And strangulation, to understand what we're talking about, is not, we're not looking at just a loss of airways, of not being able to breathe. But strangulation fatality happens more specifically with pressure on the blood flow to the brain. And so when people are talking often about strangulation, they may use the words, I was choked, or, you know, he choked me or she was choking me. And probably what they're really referring to is being strangled rather than just having airways blocked.
Mm.
So our Virginia, many states in the U.S. at this point have increased the penalties for strangulation, just as Virginia did a couple of years ago, to a felony charge, which is really great. But it's all a matter of recognizing strangulation, being able to make the case for it and prove that it occurred.
Exactly. Exactly. And people really need to, if this happens and you survive it, get to the hospital. You need to get this reported, call the police, go to the hospital. You know,
absolutely.
A lot of people don't do this. And then, you know, it's days later, the marks might be gone, you know.
Right.
You
or
might
they,
buy
the
it
effect,
see it on the outside, like, unless you get, I don't know, other testing, I suppose, on the inside, of course, like CAT scans or MRIs,
right.
Perhaps.
Some of those, the symptoms may only appear days later, and some of the complications may appear days after the strangulation has occurred. So it is definitely be checked out, call on the EMTs, and or take a trip to the hospital.
So what advice would you give to somebody that was in this dangerous situation to try to help them escape?
I would very definitely suggest that someone contact a victim advocate. Most of our areas have victim advocates at shelters, and those are people who have a really good working knowledge of domestic violence dynamics and who would be very capable of talking with each person individually about the situation and how to form a safety plan. And a safety plan would be the plan of action to get someone out of the relationship without a lethality occurring. So some of the things that a victim advocate might help someone determine might be, you know, some of the parts of typical safety plans might be having all of your important phone numbers together, knowing what your resources are. Sometimes it's good to have someone help walk you through that, because when you're in a moment of panic and desperation, you might not even really be able to recognize how many resources you still have available. So letting other people know your plan, thinking about where you're going to go and who might be able to help you get to where you're going. Is there someone in your life who could keep a bag of essential items together if you assembled the things that you thought you might need to be able to escape? Could that be ready and stored at a friend's house, or some of the sentimental items that you might not want to leave behind? Your pets, is there someone who could take care of your pets while you're gone? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people will delay leaving or will stay because the bond with their animal is so strong. So figuring out a plan for your pets so that you're able to get to a safe place, and absolutely the same with your children, figuring out if it's the safest move to take your children with you and where can you go. So simple things like mm-hmm. that, just making sure that your vehicle is in working order, that it has gas in it, that you have keys and copies of keys for your car, your house, all of your important documents, birth certificates, financial medical records, insurance papers, if you have rental agreements or a mortgage agreement, having all of that information ready beforehand. And then the most important thing that I would say about what advice I would give to someone who's in a dangerous situation is don't tell your partner that you're leaving. Just find the safest time and go. Mm-hmm. Because alerting that partner with a dramatic, I'm finished, this is over, I'm done, and I'm moving on, mm-hmm. Is that piece that you have just now taken back all of the power and control that this person has held on to for a long time, and many people don't react very well to that.
No, not at all. And this is such great information. So again, for anybody listening to this that is in a situation, knows anybody in a situation, these are some of the things that calling a hotline, a shelter, whether you're looking to get into a shelter or you just need a victim advocate. There's so many resources available to people. You're really, truly never alone. I always say that too when I talk about suicide hotlines and things like that. You're never alone, you know. And again, seeing if you have friends that would be available, could you go there or could they hold your things? It's very important. And again, we're going to be going to break shortly again, but let's just briefly talk about stalking and why that's related to domestic violence.
Well, stalking is one of those crimes, again, I think that people underestimate And sort of culturally, we joke about stalking. We have a lot of sort of lightness around it. And in reality, it's a very dangerous crime. And more people are experiencing stalking in our country than we realize. It's there's the National Stalking Resource Center estimates. Well, actually, they're basing this on surveys about stalking behavior. That 6.6 million people in the United States are stalked every year, and many of them are stalked by a partner, a current or former partner. So it's where we're seeing stalking and domestic violence as a huge concern is looking retrospectively at fatalities. This is a really terrifying statistic that in a particular study of femicide, which is the murder of women, the researchers found that of women who had been in a physically abusive relationship with a male partner and were later killed by that partner, 89% of them had experienced stalking in the year prior.
Oh, my goodness. So, again, take this seriously. This is serious stuff, people. It is not to be taken lightly. Larissa, real quick before break, how can people find you or get more information?
Online, our web address is www.samaritanhouseva.org, or you can call us through our hotline at 757-430-2120.
And this is Shella Zappia, and we will be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
How many times have you heard this?
I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired.
You are what you eat.
I've tried every diet.
Diets don't work.
It's time to stop this kind of madness and start thinking and feeling empowered to change your health. Tune in to The Raw Truth with Chef Sharon Fraser. Join us weekly for thought-provoking conversations with world-renowned experts in the food, medical, holistic, sports medicine, chiropractic, and naturopathic health sciences. The Raw Truth airs live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Step by step, you made it through the journey of pregnancy. Now your baby is in your arms and you're on the cusp of a new journey, breastfeeding. As a new parent, you receive a lot of advice, much of it conflicting, some of it outdated. Tune into Born to be Breastfed with host Marie Biancuso to bust through the myths about feeding your baby. Marie and her guests will help you figure out what you can expect and put you on the best and surest path on your breastfeeding journey. Listen every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Chella's Chat. To reach Chella Zappia or today's guest, please call into the show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to chellazappia@outlook.com. Now, back to Chella's Chat.
And welcome back to Chella's Chat. And we've been speaking with Larissa Sutherland regarding domestic violence. And there's so much information that we possibly can't get to it all today. It is just, yeah, it's a very complex subject. But we're hoping that we get out enough information that this is helping somebody and it just gives you facts. There's some really powerful documentaries out that you can Google and pull them up and watch them right online, which can give you a very good feeling for what we're talking about. One is Sin by Silence. That's really the story, right, Larissa, of convicted women who were convicted of, you know, killing their spouses because they were in such abusive situations that they had no choice, and then they ended up getting convicted. Very powerful. Telling Amy's Story is another one. And there was another one. It's Power and Control, Domestic Violence in America. If anybody didn't get all of those, you can always contact me at chellazappia.com. Go to my contact page and I can send you those that information. But really getting back in here because we're at the last segment. We've been talking a lot because it is such a crime. Usually we think of women, but I know, Larissa, that there's broader sexual victimization here. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yes. The domestic violence, intimate partner violence is often couched as a women's issue. And what we do see is overwhelmingly this is a gender-based violence. But we also know there's tremendous potential for men to be abused and for people in LGBTQ relationships to be abused. So the CDC's survey recently found that the group of people who experience the greatest amount of abuse from an intimate partner in their lifespan are bisexual women. So this is an issue that affects everyone. Anyone can be a perpetrator of abuse and anyone can be a victim of abuse. So it's really important that if, you know, when you're doing research around domestic violence and you're finding that, that most of the information is geared toward women as victims, that there is a lot of information if you're digging deeper to really explore. Power and control is not a sex trait, so all of those the relationships where women are the abusers are out there, and there's information on that too. So if you need any of that information, we also have information at our website for just a variety of dynamics across the board for different relationships.
And I think that's very important as well. And so for any people that may be out there, you're a family, you have somebody in your family, or you're a friend of somebody, and you know that there's something going on and you feel helpless, what would you say to them about how they can help that person that's in an abusive relationship?
I would encourage people to be patient, to be available, and to be non-judgmental. To listen to the story that this person is telling. People who are in the abusive situation know their story better than anyone else. And they're going to be making decisions that they think are going to be in their best interest, and we hope that they are in their best interest. So when someone leaves a relationship and returns to that relationship, it's very possible they're doing that because this feels like the safest thing to do at the time. Mm-hmm. So making sure that you are available to someone and not cutting people off by saying, you know, if you go back one more time, don't even bother to call me, because I can guarantee that they won't. They won't call, they won't reach out, and you might be the last person who could have been there when they made the decision they were ready to leave.
Right.
So I think there are a lot of ways we can help, and I think it is actually all of our responsibility to get involved. These are not private family matters. These are crimes that are being committed behind closed doors.
So how do people get involved? What can people do?
Well, here's my best strategy for prevention is to be kind. I think if we
Simple.
Are kind to each other and we honor and defend everyone else's right to kindness, then we're taking that first step of modeling healthy and safe behavior. So, but there are a lot of very practical things beyond just modeling good behavior that you can do to encourage people in your world to be more aware. And that might be something like if you're going to the doctor and you have your regular screening and your doctor doesn't ask you about the health or safety of your relationship, ask him or her to start including that in screenings, because this is a good way for people to open up and find the help they need. Maybe talking to church leaders or civic leaders or people in education and asking them to bring educational presentations to the group so that we're spreading that word around. And then paying attention even to what's happening in our communities, what legislation might be coming up that would strengthen penalties against abusers or expand rights for victims. And then, you know, taking an active part in communicating with legislators or voting for legislators who have those have that as a strong platform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like I did, felt very strongly about getting involved, and now I do the crisis hotline. Want to help educate, you know, which is really what this show's about. It's about educating, you know, advocating, whatever you can. If it's collecting donations, they, you know, these victims sometimes leave with nothing. They need things. So if you can provide provide food or provide toiletries or clothing or whatever they may need. I mean, there's so many things that you can do. And it's really tough. I mean, I can say just by being on the hotlines, the stories are heartbreaking. And there are days the phones are crazy. Many days. There's one after the other. So these are the people out there. Not all of them are domestic violence. Some of them are in just homeless situations, which is also a whole nother show. But
right.
But many of them are in domestic violence situations. And it just breaks your heart. And you have to just do what you can to, you know, you're that kind word on the other side of the phone. And
right.
It's all, you know, and trying to get them in. And a lot of times the shelters are full. We can't take everybody. So, you know, we have to hopefully defer and get in the worst case scenarios at the time that we can. So for people out there, you know, this show is not just Virginia Beach based. It's around the world. Mm-hmm. Are there services available everywhere? And how can they get help?
There are services growing worldwide. In the United States, we now have many, many shelters in all of the states across the country. It wasn't the case even 30 years ago. 40 years ago, maybe there were a handful of shelters. And now what we have is the National Hotline, which is a really great networked hotline. And anyone can call the National Hotline and be routed to the local program that will be the best fit for that service. So the National Hotline number is 1-800-799-SAFE. So that's 1-800-799-7233. And in Virginia, we have a state hotline that operates in the same way, that will connect people in our state to the services that are closest to them in their communities. And our state hotline is 1-800-838-8238. And anywhere, if you're calling, if you're interested in information across states, even if you call our local hotline at Samaritan House, we can connect people. We have a good interstate shelter program, so we're able to communicate with shelters across the nation to help people if they're needing to transfer from, say, Virginia Beach, if they're trying to get to somewhere in Utah where they have friends and family, we're able to help navigate that, get someone where they need to be for the safest place.
And so, again, and if you need hotline numbers, again, you can also contact me for that, and I have them here. We've been talking so much about these intimate, violent, domestic violent situations, stalking, strangulation, all these really heady subjects. But maybe just briefly, what does a healthy relationship look like? What should people be looking for in a relationship?
Healthy relationships are beautiful, and they're possible, and everyone deserves one. And a healthy relationship really is about equality. It's about equal input into the relationship and sharing your ideas, making sure that you are honoring each other's rights. And we all have rights in a relationship. Many of us don't recognize what our relationship rights are, so we don't know when they're being violated by our partners. So healthy relationship rights might be that you have the right to be treated with kindness, that you have the right to feel safe and be peaceful in your relationship. You have the right to spend time with your friends and family, even without your partner. You have the right always to expect kindness, to expect honesty and safety, to consider what's best for you. Even simple things like you have the right to wear what makes you feel most comfortable, not what makes your partner feel most comfortable, mm-hmm. and to have your own interests, your own hobbies, to have that autonomy, and you can share these experiences with your partner. You always have the right to say no to any kind of affection for any reason or for no reason at all. There's a lot of sexual coercion and abuse that's a part of intimate partner violence. So I think these are some of the pieces of what makes a really healthy relationship is when you feel safe, you feel respected, and you feel truly loved in that relationship.
Yes. And I so agree. And I know that's the kind of relationship that I have. And I would say that a word, when people ask me, you know, what makes the relationship so good, I say it's easy.
Right.
It's easy. It's not hard. And I didn't know that until I really had this relationship in my life. Other relationships were harder, whether it was just arguing or whatever. It didn't have to be physical violence or anything like that. But this is easy, and it should be easy because it's mutual respect of each other and supporting one another. And it feels good. You know, it feels really good. And like you said, every single human being deserves that. And people make a conscious choice. Again, just because you may have grown up in an abusive situation does not mean you are going to be an abuser, or you should use that as the reason you abuse. You can get help for that. And I know personally in my life people who have been in very abusive situations, and they are not abusers. And right. I also know the opposite. So really, before we close out the show, any closing thoughts?
I hope that what people will take with this from this is the information that to share among family members, friends, circles, coworkers, the people in our lives, because it really is an issue that affects every single one of us. And each of us can play a role in helping to rescue someone from a situation and helping to hold the perpetrator of this crime accountable. So it no longer can we really stop talking about it. This thrives in silence, and people are being abused and they're being killed under the silence. So just talking about it, opening up that space for conversation to occur.
Yeah. And that goes with the theme of what I always speak about, is it's in the sharing of our stories that we heal. It's in taking away the stigma. You know, if you feel that you're ashamed or embarrassed about something, don't be, because you could save a life. And that's exactly why I talk about what I talk about, and had to, release the stigma from my situation so that I could get the information out there. So when we start to share our stories and when we open up, the world does become gentler and kinder, because we begin to help each other. And it's really incredibly beautiful. Lastly, Larissa, how, again, can people reach you or Samaritan House?
Our Samaritan House website gives lots of information about our program and the services that we provide, shelter and victim advocacy and education services, and a lot of information about the issues. So if anyone's interested in checking the website out, it is www.samaritanhouseva.org, or people can reach us through the hotline at 757-430-2120, or through our office line at 757-631-0710.
And I thank you so much for being on the show today and for providing all of this information to everybody. It's been a pleasure.
Chella, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been great. I see Chella in passing when she's on her way to take hotline calls, and she'll stop into my office and we have a good conversation. And so I'm glad that we can share all of our thoughts and ideas about how to share this information with other people. I'm glad we can do that outside just my door.
Yeah, me too. It's all about educating. And thank you so much for coming on to do just that and allowing me to be the venue for that. And again, I'm Chella Zappia, and you can get me at Chella Zappia. Remember, it's C-E-L-L-A. Zappia at outlook.com or chellazappia.com. And until next time, have a great evening.
Thank you again for being part of the show. Chella's Chat featuring Chella Zappia can be heard live every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. This week, find your balance.